What was your reaction to reading what the Dormouse said?
The period, the most emphasis one was the period when ARC, when Xerox PARC got going. Quite a few of my people left and went over there. But it was a time in which the sort of intersection of three very different attitudes about what computers would do, and it just aptly represented by those three laboratories that he highlighted. I came out in the rear end that I was talking about how this is going to augment humans. AI people were going to sort of say it was supplementing them. And then the Xerox PARC people were more like, we're automating. They somehow seemed focused on automating the secretary because that was automating the office, the word processing. So I had been working by 1971, that had been 20 years for me that I had been single-mindedly pursuing, thinking about this whole thing that I'd begun to call augmentation. So a lot of background thinking in that. So I knew, and I'd written a very long report that was published in 1962 after about 2 years of just sitting, thinking, working, struggling about sort of the conceptual framework of what augmenting the human intellect actually implied. And so very, very different orientation. For instance, the focus I had was on capability, that this is what we're augmenting, human capability. If people started acting as they did then and for actually several decades or more, that the computer human interface people were sort of emphasizing it's got to be easy to learn. For instance, in the PARC people were sort of like, the real user is a secretary, and it's got to be easy to learn. I try to say the real user is tomorrow's knowledge worker, and let's go after capability. No, it's got to be easy to learn.
You're speaking about augmentation abstractly. Suppose right now you were that perfect knowledge worker of the future with a perfect augmentation system. What would it be like, and what capabilities would you have that you don't have right now?
I mean,
let your imagination run wild here.
Well, that's very hard to have. There are not even terms available for a lot of it. The thing is that in my research, looking at the scale of change, because I very soon, right from 51, was talking, hey, the problems that we're really faced with in the world are really big, complex ones. That was my objective, was to help get us more capable of understanding and coping. And so this, I realized, was a collective challenge, because the big, tough problems had to be dealt with collectively. And somehow we weren't getting collectively smart enough to understand and cope with them. Well, you can look at global warming, for instance. Collectively, we're all tied up with emotional hang-ups and everything else you could call corruption, and just many things that are keeping us as a society from intelligently seeing what's happening and adjusting. So this collective knowledge was the real orientation, and already I got the whole concepts about an augmentation system creating, providing human capability above just what bare human, untrained, uneducated, etc. has. So you look at all of the training and what kind of things, all kinds of skills, all kinds of artifacts, etc., embedded in your life, this many customs and just a huge array of social, cultural, organizational, and technical things with the kind of skills and understanding that it took humans to operate within that. And bringing in the computer was another whole domain that, if you go back and look at the end impact on societies of technological innovations, and you look at something like elevators, for instance, you see, boy, they didn't just automate your way to get up to this top floor, which was probably about 7 then. then you've got skyscrapers, and then you've got cities that were much, much different from anything before.
Certainly from the most basic point of view, computers have had a huge impact. You could look at worker productivity, for example, has gone up greatly in the era of computing. Has the augmentation program that you started up to this point been a success? Does it look like computing is on the path to augment human intelligence in the way that you originally envisioned?
It's sort of partway, but it's limited by paradigms, such as, hey, how much you're going to learn, and then what kind of capabilities are available, and how do you go about boosting significantly, like boosting the educational capabilities of our country significantly, not just automating here and there. See? So really, we go back to some specific differences that occurred, say, in the early 70s, which was the era in which he's talking about. For instance, I was very much saying, I'm really interested in personal computing. I tried to explain the difference to my staff about personal computers and personal computing. And we adopted in the late 60s a very, very minimal kind of client software and hardware, working over the internet to the server. We had the kind of things we showed in 1968, which were, some of them still aren't duplicated, and none of them could have been done for decades with PCs.
In 1968, you did a very famous demonstration in San Francisco at a computer conference where you displayed technologies that were very much technologies of the future. Could you tell us about what some of the technologies you demonstrated at that conference were that really didn't become available to the general public as products for 10, 15, or 20 years?
Well, we had full hyperlinkage that was more flexible than you see yet, that a link could point to anything and you could jump. We had integrated graphics with that. Then we also had the sharing of, you know, you get somebody else and you could see his display on your screen and pass the controls back and forth.
So very much like net meeting.
Yeah, so.
Or other electronic meeting programs.
Right. So we're saying, look, that you could do that with the time-shared thing on the network like that. Just the whole attitude about, well, it's so hard to learn. They watch our stuff work. For instance, the command system. The very simplest first thing people tried was equivalent to cut and paste. We used the commands copy, delete, move, replace, switch. The verbs and nouns just evolved, and people just learned them, and they could be set up so as they start working on the system with whatever subset was seemed that they'd want to start with, and they could learn that quite quickly. In those days, we could have a secretary come aboard that had never even heard of a computer, and she'd be given a very simple subset, and she could be producing, doing word processing for us in about an hour. We actually had spreadsheets operating in the early 70s, and email before anybody else did, and all those were just part of the environment. The whole thing about you have to encourage the evolution of the environment. In 74, I got made an okay deal with it. I could start selling service to, you know, approved sort of vendors or people, customers, which were government agencies and university research places, that they could start using our system over the network. And we got a training crew and everything else that could train them, and really working on the, really getting their working methods evolving. Then in 77, well, the stress was terribly hard. In spite of my trying to say things like, it's evolution, the capability that we want to get. You learn that strong thing about it's got to be learned, and the people got interested in personal computers because they were going to come. And, oh boy, hey, you got to shift to this. And I said, no, we'll shift to personal computers when they can start providing the functional capability we're talking about. But we're interested in pushing the real kind of capability that people and groups, collaborators, because that was a big emphasis from early on.